You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Doing it.
Rolling. Here we are as the music fades, as that hot brass jam welcomes your earbuds to our voices. And here we are. Tim, kick us off in that way that you always do.
Hey, everybody. Yeah. It's a Triple Radio. Dave trying to take over the introduction because he knows when the music is fading out and I don't. You've been doing this for like a couple months now.
I do. Well, because it's like either I could do that or I could give you like a visual, like a 3, 2, 1, go. It and like matter. I don't know, would you prefer that or
I don't know, it doesn't matter. You could, maybe you should just do it all the
this
time.
Way it feels, yeah. like it's, hey, we're starting and let's all just, you know, it and in it's starting in media res is,
yeah,
because we've all just been riffing, just, yeah, you know, yeah, trying to, yeah, save the hottest riffs for all of you listeners.
Yeah, so yeah, we have to have the awkward don't talk to each other about anything before the show.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
every podcast does, and then you talk about real stuff. Anyways, yeah, I'm Tim. That's Dave. That's Weiss.
Hi. Whoa, that's that introduction. Yes, saying hello. Saying hello with a classic.
Yeah, saying hi and saying there are the people.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for.
No, in most normal podcasts, they introduce people one by one and they say, oh, hey, how are you doing? And then the person talks. So the listener can become acclimated to the person's voice and be like, oh, that's Dave. And that's Weiss.
Ideally, we sound different, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why. Interesting. I never thought of it that way because I personally find it annoying when a podcast host says, hello, I have a panel of guests. Please introduce yourself and tell us who you are. Like, just introduce your guest and then let them say, hi, good to be here. I don't know. I think it's weird to say
people,
like,
do different things. Well, that's like a Retronauts does that, don't they?
Retronauts
usually,
does. Yeah. Yeah.
They usually have the person introduce themselves by name.
That feels like you knew exactly what I was referencing. And that feels very awkward to me.
Yeah.
Well. You know what? You say people do different things. Mm-mm. No, you're not allowed. Never mind. No,
wow.
you don't get to do different things. Everyone do the same thing. Speaking of everything, one do the same thing. Tim, I was just admiring your shirt. It's a very cool Helldivers shirt. You say you got that at MAGFest this year?
Yeah, it's a fan gamer shirt, so it just conveniently was there for me to purchase without shipping being involved. So, yeah, it's a Helldivers 2 shirt, and there's a lot going on. There's,
I know, it's a lot. It's very bright. Yeah. I love all the colors on that. But I was trying to get a better glance at Weiss's shirt because I see, like, the
old MAGFest.
That's exactly what I thought that was, yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful pajama shirt. There was only, like, an XL or a double XL when it was available, and I'm like, get me that. It's a fun design.
Yeah,
I was not at this one, I don't believe.
Got any old, like, MAGFest shirts, which is something I regret now, that I didn't just buy a shirt. Well, actually, I think I had a MAGFest 2 shirt, which was like a Half-Life 2 logo thing, I think, on the back.
And it was also
like a little Halloween themed because it was on Halloween, I want to say. Or maybe, I don't, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've got this and the Final Fantasy one. Those are the two. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I only have the one from this past year, the Mega Man X themed one, but I'm just like, yeah, wow, I have not kept track of my badges. I have not, like, accumulated shirts or programs or things that I really wish I had now. Of all the things that I accumulate and don't get rid of,
you know,
like,
badges, I have most of.
My badges are right over here.
I have a badge collection somewhere. I don't have, like, all of, like, the anime cons and MAGFest and stuff, and I wish I. But, you know, I moved multiple times through MAGFest.
Exactly.
Just not every piece of bric-a-brac comes with me.
No. I mean, I use them for Christmas ornaments, so that's why.
Yeah, good thinking.
Yeah.
It's not every podcast that all three of us are literally wearing video game-themed T-shirts, but I must admit, I feel like mine is the weakest of the three because it is merely, like, it's just the name of the game, The Legend of Zelda, and then it's a bunch of screenshots from Breath of the Wild. It is a very, like, and you know, it's because my wife got it for me. going to say that real soft. My wife got it for me, and being a normie, she doesn't really know where to get t-shirts that are like an artist's unique take on something.
Yeah,
But she
you got a lovely gift.
It's a lovely gift.
I have an Elden Ring shirt that I got as a gift that is just like the box art.
Yeah.
And I have an Elden Ring shirt that I bought, which is like an artist's rendering of like, you know, many of the characters and scenes from the game that I actually just got off the Yeti. Because I realized on the Yeti that I had accumulated a lot of points just over the years because I just buy shirts from the Yeti, you know, GDQ and shit like that. And I had like $40 worth of points to use.
I'm sorry,
on
wait,
the Yeti.
Are you pronouncing that the Yeti?
Yes.
Isn't yeah,
it's spelled Yeti, right?
Yeah,
Yeti.
But
I mean, their logo is a Yeti, is it not?
Yeah, their mascot's a little Yeti there. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think Yeti sounds weird, don't you?
Well, yes, hey, it does, but it's memorable.
Well, when you learn something from reading it, I buy things from Bubble Lead, you buy things from Bubble Lead. Actually, yeah. kind of reverse, but yeah.
The Yeti. Wow.
I thought Dave was having a moment where he was like, oh, maybe I have credit. No, he's just.
Nope.
I was surprised by that too. I did not know they did credit, but I buy a shirt.
Just like
five, 6 years, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's like usually I find something on GDQ and occasionally there's like one of the random daily shirts that I, well, especially now I'm like, well, I just basically get free shipping on any shirt I want to buy because I can get coupons in increments of like $7 or $9 or something like that. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Anyways, yeah, shopping, it's great.
I saw a guy at the grocery store today wearing like original Final Fantasy I US box art, like black, just with the weapons crossed. And
see, that's cool.
It was cool, and I did one of these, like, rad shirt, dude. And he was wearing earbuds and didn't realize.
So this actually, I had this streak of back in July where like every day I had someone in public like comment on my shirt in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
and
nice.
It is nice, but like specifically this shirt, I was at Tim Hortons for some reason. I don't know. I don't usually go there of my own accord. But like a guy was like, oh man, nice Helldiver shirt. And as I walked out the door, I gave him the Super Earth salute. and he gave it back to me and was really excited. So
that's
that was like
great.
A really, really great moment.
That's fun to have that little secret handshake out in the wild.
Absolutely. It's awesome. we're here to talk about stuff. Shirts and whatnot. Before the show, Weiss and I were also mourning the passing of Andy Williams.
I did not know who this was, but I've seen a lot of people. Yeah. Obviously, he was, and he was from the area, right? He was a Buffalo
area
guy.
He's a Buffalo area guy. You know, was in Every Time I Die, a really well-known hardcore metal band. He was also in All Elite Wrestling. Kind of one of the first people that was part of the company is the Butcher. Him Butcher and the Blade were a tag team. They were, you know, and this is the thing, like, he didn't win like world titles, they didn't even win tag team titles, but like they knew their place and literally vocalized this. They were big mean mid-card goons. They're there to just, like, you know, they're there to beat up Batman before Batman, you know, gets to the larger boss.
They're a bobo, they're mini bosses. They're great.
But just like very well known in two communities, and well, three, if you know, like Buffalo and music and wrestling. Yeah. So it's just like all over the place. People are talking about it.
And a genuinely nice human being. Yeah. From
turns out he's a real nice dude. Everyone's just saying he's so nice and the sweetest man. And just,
very sad.
And only 48.
Yeah, that's very sad.
As we are all 45 on here. Whenever someone's in their 40s, just drops dead, basically. Oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
He had some kind of like a medical episode, like at a wrestling event last night in the ring.
Kind
of cardiac event. It's not like, oh, he had, you know, cancer and, you know, we knew it was coming for a while. Or maybe I don't think so. Oh, it was awful. He was in a car accident. It's just like, no, just man who was for all intents and purposes healthy and had plenty of runway ahead of him, just dying. And when you're up getting up into your 40s, that's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Gosh.
Even though it was obviously like big, huge accident, but was just the relating the Owen Hart, walking through the airport for our like senior trip and like seeing that news there, you know?
Yeah, wild. Anyways.
Yeah.
I don't know. Should we get the other big death out of the way or just save that for the end? I don't know.
Yeah. Which we got like.
Yeah, which one do you mean? I think I know which one you mean.
Yeah, no, I was I was talking about Peter Cullen. But
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That could segue into a Transformers minute also, actually, because I've got three new figures sitting right in front of me. Very, very, very sad about Peter Cullen. Especially when you
less sudden. He was old.
Well,
so,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But when you go, what is really cool was the first time you sort of like, because Peter Cullen is not thought of as like the man of a million voices in the same way as Frank Welker is, but like when you go back and sort of look at his IMDb credits, it's like, oh my gosh, he was this extremely versatile utility player, and has just as many, an incredibly wide variety of roles for so long, up until sort of like getting his big break with Transformers. But he still had such a huge resume, could do a very diverse range of vocal styles, just as versatile a performer as someone like a Frank Welker, but just became really, really iconically identified with Prime, and rightly so, because it is, as I think I posted in my post about it, there is a unique alchemy to the blend of like not just the deepness of his voice, but also his Canadian accent, which has broader vowels, which lends itself more naturally to that sort of laconic John Wayne, sort of big and broad sort of style. And then when you combine that with the fact that he was nearly our age, 43, when he booked the role, his voice had already matured to a certain point where when you take that natural grit that is in his throat and then you put the acting on it, which is the acting direction, the strength to be gentle that he famously borrowed from his soldier brother, just a real magic combination of stuff that I think every voice actor kind of wishes they could pull off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they put him in a position to do that voice for 40 years.
Yeah.
It's not like he stopped.
Yeah.
Right.
They have that re-release of Transformers, the movie that comes out in like next Friday or something like that. Some added scene short in it, which is apparently his final performance in the role of Optimus Prime.
Wow.
Wild. Yeah. But it's just like, he was there, the go-to, the available, there was, and ready to do it. And I mean, I know other people have done the voice of Optimus Prime, but he got to do it in the Bay movies and so many series and video games and everything.
Yeah.
Huge loss. Yeah. Huge voice of the childhood.
It's only can be really comparable to like the old classic like Disney voices and like longevity of just sort of like, Jim Cummings is still doing Winnie the Pooh or.
Yeah, an amazing career, an inspirational guy, and just hot on the heels of losing other just super deeply beloved performers like Dolly Parton and Tim Curry. That was I don't know. It's weird. Peter Cullen was the only one that I don't know kind of shed a tear or two over here and there, just sort of thinking about. Because he was such a gracious guy, and there's so many clips of him at conventions, telling that story about discovering the hero that he could be. It's just inspiring stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, also, the, yeah. Obviously, the first two were awful of that week. This felt laser targeted at me.
Yeah.
at that point, I was already like worn out. I mean the voice acting side, like I knew Tim Curry for I mean like Clue was there, but also King Chicken and Duckman.
Yeah,
and
talk about voice acting. I mean,
yeah, up through. I mean, I was just listening through like the Brutal Legend stuff, like last year. You know, like getting him like late career, like Tim Curry villain, was like such a get. I mean, that whole game is gets, but
my God.
Yeah. I mean,
although neither of them, let's face facts, they're no Chris Hemsworth, which is what you get when you have Orion Pax from Transformers 1. He is on clearance right now at Target, so he's 50% off. So $13 for a deluxe figure, which is just about as good a price as you can possibly get. Although, when you compare him to what was the comparably priced Studio Series Transformers 1 Prime from last year, like, this is a spectacular figure. The fit and finish and sculpt is just really, really befits a Studio Series, whereas this guy definitely feels cheap and plasticky. It's a glossier plastic finish. But for $13, I could, and the transformation is...
Oh, where's your... Oh, there it is.
Okay. I was
your audio cut out for, like...
My audio cut out? Oh, no.
Yeah, you had a hiccup. You had a hiccup.
Boo. Anyway, Studio Series Prime is clearly just vastly superior, and you'd especially consider, like, that's how they scale size-wise, and these would retail for the same price. But he's got this big old buzzsaw, and he is my only Orion Pax so far, so I wanted to have an Orion Pax in my collection, and for $13, I couldn't resist. So he's fun. He'll be fun to just keep on the shelf there. I also picked up that Bumblebee, Devastation Bumblebee, because he's on sale everywhere right now for a clean 20 instead of, you know, 28.
Didn't know.
And he is good. I would say I don't necessarily like him better than the Studio Series.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the Studio Series. I think the Studio Series is maybe more a definitive B for me. And I've never liked the sort of Devastation cell shading style. I don't like how Devastation Bumblebee's face is, it's paler, looks more painted on, it's not like metallic like every other Bumblebee figure I have. But he's taller, he's leaner, he cuts a good figure, and the transformation is good, and his alt mode is actually very cool. It's a more fun sort of Coro-Q styled car than Studio Series B is. But maybe the coolest pickup here is Kranix, who I've been hunting for a while now. And I took my kids to the mall a few weeks ago, and at our most active mall, there is now a small format Toys R Us.
Like, oh yeah, yeah, they got one of those at the Galleria. Yep.
Do they? Okay, yeah. Yeah. Which I believe
zombie
is
Zombie Toys R Us.
It's a Zombie Toys R Us. Yes, it is fully like private equity went and bought the name and just totally flipped one of those no-name toy stores at the mall into a Toys R Us. And I saw Kranix there, and they were selling him for like $40. Jesus. And then I looked up the MSRP, and I'm like, nope, not doing that.
Yeah.
But then we had to go to a Walmart after that anyway, and I spotted him on the shelf at a Walmart, just in the wild, at the retail price he should be. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm buying him for 28 then. So, yeah, and he's awesome. It's just amazing to have a Kranix figure. His alt mode is weird, but it's a fun transformation. And he's a cool figure, so... Was glad to pick up Kranix, complete my movie collection. And that's the Transformers Minute for me. but not for Tim.
No. I didn't. I actually don't think I've gotten any new Transformers in the last month. but I did get this this Helldivers.
Oh, geez.
Engineer.
You are all Helldivers all the time today.
I am. Yeah. Well, we talked about it on the shirt. Yeah. I don't know. This was because I tried to get like this is a McFarlane figure, by the way, and they have one. They have a I know I'm not pointed at the microphone right now, but the, you know, they have a figure that is like the kind of the generic Helldiver, like you see on my shirt, you see on the things that there is an engineer. I tried to get a hold of this guy. I was not able to, which is fine. I mean, like, I don't wear this Helldiver armor like ever in the game, but I really wanted to get like a bunch of them to send out to the Helldiver bros, but I could not. They were hard to get a hold of, but fortunately my toy store got that guy in. So.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. How tall is that sculpt? That looked like a very big figure. Is that like a 8-9 inches tall? Is he seems big.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that does look like 9 inches tall.
Dang.
Yeah. And he comes with all sorts of like guns and accessories and like stuff. To
yeah, he looked very well kitted out.
Yeah. Very well equipped. And then and that, just today I got a Spider-Man India.
This was just a
loose $10 figure.
Wow,
at
really?
In one of my local toy stores. Yeah, I found him hanging out there. It came with like all of his accessories, not whatever the creative figure piece was, but I don't care about that. And just adding him to my Spider-Verse collection, which I got like the noir. I got a Spider-Man noir. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Nick Cage there.
Yeah, yeah, which is good because the noir figure that came out, I don't know, for the original Spider-Verse movie, that it was expensive. So I'm glad I just kind of waited to see if he would show up again, and then he did. So now I got a Spider-Punk over here. I need a Penny Parker, really.
Yeah, that'd be
oh,
cool.
Yeah. Oh, whoa. Everyone seems to need a Penny Parker these days. She is.
Yeah.
Seems to be trending. Well, at least Penny Parker is very much trending on my social media.
Well, she's in Rivals, Marvel Rivals. Oh, so she's kind of become, I mean, she's been in Marvel Rivals from the beginning, but she is a more visible character these days than she used to be.
Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of Marvel, and no, I'm
there
not
going to transition
into the movie. No, not the movie that I saw. But we'll get video games out of the way real quick on this show.
I was going to say, I can actually talk about this one too. Yeah. Assumably. No.
About what, the movie or the game?
The token beta.
I forgot that. About that. Yeah, oh, okay, going on the token beta. No, I was talking about Marvel Snap. Remember that game?
Yeah,
I remember you've played it.
Yes, no, I mean, like, I've played it continually since launch.
Yeah,
that is like my go to phone game. That took the place of Hearthstone Battlegrounds when basically the second it came out, I stopped playing Hearthstone and started playing Marvel Snap because Marvel Snap games are much shorter and can be played much more conveniently and quickly and time friendly. So that's been like my go to phone game for since it launched through ups and downs. And there's been a lot of downs in the past couple years for that game. It felt like it was on a steady decline. But man, it got a huge juice of energy last week because they finally put a draft mode in the game, drafting in card games is where you kind of draft a random deck together and then play it against other people. And it's a mode that, you know, a lot of people love. Like I played the crap out of draft mode in Hearthstone for years and years and years. And finally, they had this draft mode in there as a limited time thing. Basically, it feels like kind of like a beta for the mode. But also at the same time, they've been like giving away a ton of stuff to like returning players, like decks and stuff. So there's actually been a lot of enthusiasm around Marvel Snap for a change, a game that felt like it was dead and, you know, on the wayside and being forgotten. And now like people are kind of coming back to it and it's been a lot of fun, feels really good. And the draft mode has been excellent. I've been playing a lot of that in the last 2 weeks. And it's a lot of fun. It's really well designed, and not just as like a straight card draft mode. They play around with the cards that they offer you in it and like kind of tweak their abilities and costs a little bit from their base stats. So it becomes, I don't know, you get to play with cards and create combinations in ways that you never would be able to in like the normal format of the game. So it's not just like, oh, you take the cards from the like regular ranked ladder and then mush them together and make a deck and go. It's like, no, they get different kind of enhancements and abilities and they mess with the costs and power levels of them that lets you do some really unique stuff. And it's great. And it took them 4 years to get it into the game. To develop it into a place where they felt good about it, but it's great and I can't wait to play more of it. And it's just that game is has some life into it. Tokon though. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Marvel Tokon.
Man. This is the second time I've been very envious of PS5 owners after Astro Boy.
Didn't love it.
Really?
Yeah, it felt like every like the it was just like simple combo controls, and I just could not click with the controls, unfortunately. Yeah, so kind of has dropped from my radar at this point.
Wow. But I think there's more to it than that, but I'll say, like, yeah, you know, when I have not purchased the game yet because I'm just like, you know what, I'm not gonna have time to play this fighting game, really. I'm better about not just buying games. I've gotten better about that this year, as opposed to every other year of my existence.
And I have heard it's still pretty busted on PC. So,
yes, I have heard that. But yeah, no, and you know, what was like when I downloaded the beta and I'm playing it, and I was like, oh, Richard, you want to play some of this with me? He's like, nah. I'm like, okay, if he's not chomping to play it with me, I don't. And like, he's
interesting.
I'll get it when it's cheap at some point.
Sure.
But yeah, it is definitely very heavy on the auto combos, which was something they did in Dragon Ball Z Fighters, where you could just mash a button and a super comes out at the end. And they have, it did feel like a little too autopilot-y at first glance. And I've heard from people that have played more of it that, you know, after you learn more of what to do, you will move away from that.
That's good.
I'm just like, I'm not gonna get this game right away and have a lot of time for it.
I know. I I love the music in Dragon Ball, but I dropped off pretty quickly too. And as much as I love arc systems, it's not for the writing. So like going through like the story mode,
no,
that doesn't help. Even switching everything to Japanese like I do doesn't.
Yeah. No.
But I went through the training. It was this is like the first big beta that I've gotten to play in like years. So it was crazy to like go through, and it was neat to like test everything and see it. But yeah, apparently I need that complex like control scheme to click with.
Was the full roster available in the beta?
No, it was
a lot of them were.
Yeah. There
was
a decent
number, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm questioning myself because I feel like I don't know.
I was gonna say I only really played whomever they let you play, like a couple in the like Cap, Wolverine. I forget who else.
I feel like I definitely had Green Goblin and Blade on my team. Maybe Deadpool wasn't available yet.
That would make sense.
But I'm just like, well, some of the characters I wanted to play were available, so they basically all were, right? No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
the music was cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough thing with, you know, fighting games now where it was prime time when we all lived together in apartments and you could just,
Of course,
you know, just play it every night, play some games together. And yes, the internet exists, but then it's like lining up schedules and thinking about that. And I don't generally play online games on the couch. That's kind of a thing that happens here on this PC. So yeah, no, it seemed cool. I'm still interested in it, but it's just a thing where I'm like, I can wait until this is cheaper and probably get a better, you know, gameplay to monetary expenditure ratio out of it.
Yeah.
The only thing that I've put time into is I had to buy Dench Attack at some point in there.
Yeah,
no, that game rules.
Super rules.
I'm really not that far into it.
And I've put a lot of time, but it's hard for me not to want to get everything in every level.
Yeah, I can definitely feel. I'm only like a bit into the second island, I want to say.
I'm in the fifth somewhere. Okay,
yeah, you're definitely.
Yeah, that game is great. I think me and the kids, I think like put just one long evening where we, plowed into, I think, the second island and got early on in there. And I my only complaint about it, and I feel like I did see this complaint else. I saw at least one critic say that it feels a little overstuffed. Like there's more abilities than it really needs. And
I agree with that
a little bit, but
yeah,
it's fine. It's yeah.
Yeah. That's like, it's doing that thing where like, you know, like there's something introduced maybe too often where I'm just sort of like, give me time to like gel with it a bit, but like, and that still hasn't stopped, by the way, this far into the game, but like,
It's been at least a month since I picked it up. I will need to relearn everything. I have no memory of what everything is. So I really will just need to start over again.
It's just kind of like obviously it's, you know, like when I'm telling people, I'm like, it's either Tony Hawk or Jet Set, but you're a train, depending on who I'm talking to. But also like, I don't know, there's a lot of kind of Game Boy Advance just aesthetic, even with like the way the cutscenes are, just like the way things are framed.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I want more of is like the stickers and stuff like that. Cause like you don't get enough of those where they're like, you open up shops and you can customize the trains, but like it's really rare that you get new stuff to actually do that. Mm. So like versus like Jet Set where you're getting new graffiti all the time.
Okay.
Like fuck around with, but like again, all the stages rule. I just want to beat it so I can listen to the soundtrack on my own.
At
this point.
Yeah, I was trying to describe. Well, I mean, because GBA and Dreamcast both had so much that fit into the sort of, you know, the quote unquote Y2K aesthetic, which I have a really hard time like describing to my kids what exactly it was like, you know, like mod futurism, bright colors, but also like sort of not minimalist, but utilitarian. Like if you were dressed like you were a sanitation worker, but you were going to a rave, that's
honestly, see if I don't know if you would be able to sit them down without them getting, without having already seen the movie, but Josie and the Pussycats is the most Y2K movie you can do. And it's like incredibly self-aware.
I've been meaning to go back and watch that for the first time.
I watching the fashions is that it's just like it is. And I mean, literally there's Sega stuff all over. They were one of the like parts.
Oh, really?
Of it.
So
there's Ooh La La in the like stuff in the background and shit.
Fantastic.
So, like,
Yeah, for me, it's just, you know, gameplay stuff aside, just the vibes of this game are immaculate.
Mm-hmm. Immaculate vibes.
And it's, yeah, it's just like, oh, this feels like a Dreamcast game, and that's what I crave.
Yep.
So, yeah, and the soundtrack, I have listened to, like, the whole soundtrack pretty much, and it's so good. Soundtrack of the year, probably pretty easily. But, yeah, I think the game is a lot of fun, too, even if you're going to just sit. I've kind of more been, like, when I get to play it, it's like I play a few levels, and then, like, that's it for the night.
Like a lot is me kind of dipping back to the stages that like, oh, okay, I want to go back and try and do a no crash, and then like I'll advance one, and then try and do this or that. Like there's only a couple, like I can kind of go like, oh, this is a boss level, this is too long for me to like play around with, sort of thing. But yeah, no, that was a good investment. That has literally been the last like 2 months. If I play a game, I'm just popping that on.
Yeah.
All right.
I assume I'm the only other person who's played video games at this point.
Yeah, I really. I bought Wild Blue Skies, the Star Fox-esque.
Yeah,
bought it and have not had the chance to sit down and try it. It's been a month. So,
Tim,
what if? Oh, I wanted to ask you guys, has that Playdate pinball game come out yet? Because I have been eagerly waiting for that to hit Steam.
What, the Devils Dave, in the Moon? Yeah, we talked about that back in the spring. Go Did back you? And listen okay. to the show you were on. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I, if we didn't already launch into conversation when you were visiting, Dave, I was going to pick it up just to be like, and slide it across the table. Like, I had the Playdate there. It was certainly an option. I know. Well, the problem is you came over with cookies, and then we went right into that.
I know. Sorry. But, my fault for bringing cookies.
Delve into the cookies. Yeah, that game came out in, like, the spring, like March, April, something like that. It's fantastic.
I thought. I just, I know that the Steam release is, I think it's imminent, and I'm very excited and impatient. I'm sorry, Tim, you played a game.
Yes, I played a few games, some of which I'll talk about. Yeah, I did mention during our top 10 movies that I had played 007 First Light.
Yes.
Which is the the new James Bond game from IO Interactive that actually didn't look very good for a lot of the previews and trailers. I wasn't like that excited about it. And then it came out and had like really good reviews and such. So I was like, okay, I'll pick that up. And yeah, this, I have not played the Hitman games yet. That's still been on my to-do list to go back and play. Well, when I say Hitman games, I mean like the more recent trilogy. Yeah. not like the PS2 360 era Hitman games, though I've heard those are, you know, good as well. But the recent ones that are like kind of these open clockwork worlds, and there's a lot of shenanigans you can do to get your, accomplish your goals. And yeah, so First Light, and then I got to do some thinking here because I finished this game like over a month ago, but it should be spoken about. Yeah, no, it was cool. It was a really good James Bond game for sure. And, you know, I think their style does lend itself really well to the property of being able to tackle things in different ways and find your way through levels in different ways. Because, you have your gadgets for just doing different things like messing with distracting people or making things malfunction or hacking items in the environment. It's something I didn't use enough is like, if you get caught by, you know, like if you're in a stealth section and you get caught by somebody, sometimes you can bluff your way out of it, or sometimes you can just like bluff your way through situations. Like there is an option there for just kind of using Bond's charm to get out of situations, which I'm sure is not a thing that existed for Agent 47 in the Hitman games. And the action, like once I got into the groove of it, like it felt kind of, I don't know. I think early on I was playing it a little bit too much like a cover shooter, when you really need to be kind of running around. Like, they don't give you piles of ammo so you can just sit behind cover and kind of like poke out and shoot guys. You got to be like moving around and taking guys out and like grabbing their guns. And like once you get into this group, once that kind of clicked into place for me, and it's like, okay, I can't just kind of camp and just pick guys off and then move around. It's like, okay, no, I need to
be a little more aggressive.
Yeah, I need to use my like bullet time slowdown thing that you get like a few instances of, to like shoot this guy up here so I can run over to this guy over here and just like knock him out with melee. And when I knock him out with melee, his gun pops up and then I can grab his gun out of the air and shoot some other dude. Then I run out of ammo. Then I throw my gun at somebody, which is always great. It's like throwing a steel chair at somebody in wrestling. It's always great and funny. So you throw the chair at the guy, then he's stunned. Then you run up and take him out and grab his gun and shoot the next guy. And there's this really nice kind of almost choreographed like fight scene stuff to it that feels really good. Early on, I was like, what's going on? But once I got into the groove of it, it was really good. You know, does a good job of like jumping between, you know, kind of low key, like sneaking and investigation and infiltration and like action shootout scenes. And it's clear, the game is clear when it's time to kill people. Like it literally comes up on the screen that you are licensed to kill because these people are going to try to kill you so you can kill them. But you can't just like, you know, shoot somebody for no reason, unless they have intent to kill. And then, you know, some driving sequences in there as well. The story, I think overall is fine, what they were going for. Like the character relationship with kind of like your mentor trainer, I think is really good throughout. Like that's the best kind of story character interaction of the game. There are definitely moments kind of within the missions because of their open nature where I felt like I was missing stuff, or I was missing like story beats in the middle of a mission. Like one of the first big missions, there's this big, like the chess world championships at this giant like hotel, like, you know, up in some European mountains or whatever. This, you know, some very beautiful James Bondish location. And, you know, you're going in there with your team of like other 00 trainees and your trainer. And, you know, because Bond is a pain in the ass, they're like, you just stay out with the car, buddy. Like, don't go in the building. You just stay outside. because, you know, he does rash, stupid things at this point in his life. But, you know, inevitably you go into the building. So you're, you know, trying to keep cover and not let your team discover you. And I did a really good job of that. And then, like, I popped out of a door and, like, ran into, like, one of my teammates. And I'm like, oh, shit. And he's just kind of like, oh, hey, like, just talk to me normal. Like, wasn't surprised to see me. Like, I had already been found out by them. And then, like, I run into a maid who's, like, picking a lock on a door. And he just starts talking to her like he already knows her. And I'm like, Like, what's going on here? Yeah. Like, I don't know her yet. I haven't seen her before. I haven't seen her do anything. Like, what's happening? Like, I was just like, whatever route I took through the mission made me like miss story beats or something, or weird. Thought I was somewhere different. And it was like, so there was like a little bit of a disconnect.
Yeah. Well,
like that mission is where it happened like the most, but there was like kind of like some other things later on, which is kind of like, what? Like, okay, you need to tighten that up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's surprisingly
little
sloppy.
Yeah. But you know, when you have this much stuff going on in a game, and you're not Baldur's Gate 3, like, you don't, it doesn't always just come. So, like, you know, that's something I'd like to see tightened up for a sequel. But
sure.
Yeah, no, it was great. Felt really good. Really cool. Something to look out for. Another game. So you probably haven't heard of TerraTech Legion.
No. Sorry.
Okay, so this is a Vampire Survivors-like game.
Okay.
Where you are driving, like, you, it's like future. So TerraTech is like, it's a game, I guess.
Okay.
So this is like a spin-off of that, where you know, I initially had it described as like Vampire Survivors meets Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, where you have like this rig, like this big truck, you're driving around an alien planet with like a gun on it that shoots enemies. And like, whenever you level up, you get more parts to attach to your truck. And so, which can be like, you know, tires or passive enhancements or more guns. But then you are responsible for positioning them on your truck, like what direction they're facing and how everything is arranged. And so it's like every time you level up, you end up like customizing your truck like a little bit more, like where everything is positioned to try to get maximum value out of it. And it's really good. It's just really good. And it was only like $8 on Steam.
Yeah, it's still on sale for $8.
Or on sale again. Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out.
Steam's store page seems a little broken right now. It's behaving very oddly for me, and I cannot look at pictures, but.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, no, it looks fun.
Yeah, and it like each, there's four different characters who have different vehicles, and you earn stuff to upgrade them. So you are making progression on them, and each planet has different difficulty levels and different like goals to accomplish on each planet. So there's, you know, there's stuff to keep the treadmill going. But yeah, it's been cool, and I keep coming back to it. Does destroy your Steam Deck battery. I'll say that.
Yeah, I was looking at the TerraTech franchise here. There's TerraTech proper, which seems like like an open world crafting game. And
sure, yeah. Yeah, whatever. I don't know. This seems great, though. Like, it's given me no interest in what the other stuff there is, but this works just really well, like the feel of the car driving around and how everything works. Like, yeah, it's really cool.
Well, then I should add the demo to my Steam library.
So that that's what I did.
Remember to get it later.
I got the demo, and then I played it, and then I just bought it.
Bought that shit for $8.
Yeah, and otherwise, I have been back playing. I started playing Dark Souls 3 again back in the spring. I finished Dark Souls 3, and I finished the Dark Souls 3 DLC, which was great. And then I started playing Dark Souls 2 because, you know, Dark Souls 2, I think we talked about it at the time, like a few months ago, how Dark Souls 2 is kind of like the black sheep of the Souls family a little bit. It is the less loved one, but it has its freaks where they're like, Dark Souls 2 is my favorite. It's so weird. Like, it's over, you know, looked and over hated and stuff like that. And I'm almost done with it. Again, I'm playing the DLC, which I've never played the DLCs before, which is cool. And I think I have more appreciation for it than I did before. It is still my least favorite of them, for sure. They did a lot of weird stuff with 2, and people make a lot of hay that this one was not directed by Miyazaki because he was busy making Bloodborne at the time. Yeah. So this was like one of his lieutenants who went on to like be very involved in like Elden Ring and like Dark Souls 3 DLC and stuff.
So not a dumb guy.
No, it's not a dumb guy.
Useless guy.
No. Not someone where they were like, oh my God, you failed. You fool. Get out of this company. But, you know, you kind of look at it from that perspective, like, okay, they're giving this guy some responsibility to kind of like build up his chops and stuff like that. And they did some different stuff with this game that a lot of people really, really like. It's like there's different things about like the character statistics and how they work and like how like some different systems work. Like, so they tie like one of the important things, one of the things about this game is they have this hidden agility stat. It's hidden in it. And it like banks on a couple of like the, your stats, like regular, like attunement and adaptability, I think is the other one, which, you know, adaptability doesn't exist in any of the other games, but this ties into like how fast you, like how many iframes you have on your like dodge rolls, which, you know, is very important. And in all the other Souls games, it's like, well, you have like light, medium, heavy, fat roll. When your character goes to roll and you get used to that and where the invincibility frames are so that you can dodge attacks properly. But even if you have like a light roll or a medium roll in this game, like the iframes aren't necessarily there unless this statistic is built up properly. So it can feel really bad where you're like, why the hell am I getting hit by things that I feel like I shouldn't be getting hit by? And it's like, oh, because this hidden statistic isn't high enough. It also ties into how fast you drink your Estus flask, which is super annoying. Because right at the beginning of the game, it's like you're doing these slow chugs. And it's just like, oh, my God, just drink the stupid thing. This guy's coming at me. So like just being aware of that, that like in all the other games, weapons reliably scale like with your stats, but in this game like the infusions and the base damage of them are more important. So like the way you think your weapon should get more powerful isn't necessarily the way it does get more powerful. Those are like two, and I still just generally feel like the gameplay of it feels muddy. Like Dark Souls 3 feels pretty much just like Elden Ring does to me. It's not. Okay. I mean, obviously you can jump in Elden Ring. They feel very similar. But this is just, it just feels muddy. Like everything, like my character running and swinging his stuff, like just doesn't feel right. The way that targeting works to me is a bit janky with what it chooses to lock onto or not lock onto. I still think the front half of the game, that the areas kind of blow. All the areas that I like in the game are kind of after there's like something. So this is something I do have appreciation for, and I didn't like coming off of Dark Souls 1, because Dark Souls 1 has this very intricate like Metroidvania world that feels really good, where the areas like connect and reconnect in with each other, and it's very important for that game because you can't just teleport from bonfire to bonfire. In this game you can, which means you're not running back through like previous areas, but you kind of have the central hub, and then there's like four spokes that go off, and you have to go to the end of said spokes to kill a boss to bring their big ass souls back and then progress in the game.
Big ass souls.
They're big ass souls. And at the time that didn't feel great to me. That's just like, oh, they're just these linear paths you go down. Like there's no twisty or turniness to them. You just go down them, fight the boss, and then go back. But playing it now, I kind of appreciate the fact that it's like, okay, well, if you're going down one of them, you get a little stuck. There's three other places you can go. You don't have to just fight them to the end.
Okay.
You know, and so it's actually very open at the beginning. Like you can go pretty much down any four of those roads. So it does give you a lot to explore right off the bat. Are those areas interesting to explore?
maybe not, but at least they're an alternative.
But yeah, they're alternatives. I mean, there's some areas that I think just suck absolute shit. There was a point definitely where I'm in one of them where I'm just like, God, this place sucks. And it sucks in a way, just like, it's not like it's super hard. It's just annoying. And it's kind of boring and I don't like going through it. It's like, do I want to keep playing through this? Do I want to keep pushing through? It's still not something that I still don't like going through those areas. But once you kind of get past that and you go to Drang Lake Castle and the areas beyond that, then things, you know, business kind of picks up, and I've enjoyed a lot of that stuff. Also, this game is really shitty about its enemy placement. They are really big about having like five guys bum rush you at a time in certain areas, which is just like annoying. They know you're going to get overwhelmed. Sometimes the way the enemies track you is ridiculous because they will chase you to the ends of the earth, whereas in any of the other games, they will kind of leash back to like their where they belong.
Well, presumably there are like builds you can build out your sort of skill tree to do more crowd control. Yeah, is that the idea, you think, or is it
maybe
just...
But like I think it's really just kind of meant to get you it, I think.
Oh,
and it's like there's this one area that's a run-up to a boss in the Huntsman's Copse is what it's called.
Huntsman's Copse.
You got to go from the bonfire, you like run over across this bridge, then back like up across this other bridge. And then there's like this area before you go to the boss, which is an undead purgatory. And there's like these four or five guys. Some of them have whips. Some of them have like these other weapons, these like staves. And like every time I go up, they're like, you know, kind of one by one. There's like one over here right before you go into their canyon. Then there's one or there's two in there. And then there's two others that are hanging up on the walls. And then another one that jumps down behind you after you get through the area. This is how you get good at Dark Souls. You just memorize where everything is. But for some reason, and it's like most of the time I could go in there and I could kind of like aggro them one by one and then fight them and it's fine. But sometimes five of them would come at me all at once. And there is like, they're so fast, like I can't even get distance to do anything. And it's like the only way you'd be able to fight all of them at once is if you had like a heavy armor build that could take some hits and a large, like wide swinging sword, which my character was lighter and more magic-y. So that was not going to happen for me. And it's just like, and there's other areas where it's like I open a door and it's like just a clown car of guys coming like out of every hole. And it's like, this is exhausting. Like it's not interesting when you're making it hard by just like, well, I'm just going to throw like a bunch of guys at you. And it's just difficult to kind of pull them off one by one or even two at a time to try to like fight them. There's just a lot of like unfair encounters, in my opinion. It's just a little bit much, a little bit over the board, a little bit few too many enemies. Like you've done a bit much here and it's not that interesting to fight them. I just have to find a way to get through them. But I do appreciate certain things about the game more. I do think the DLCs have been cool and have had some interesting mechanics in them. I am on the last of the three now, which has one of the more infamously difficult areas in like all the Souls games in it, which I haven't quite gotten to yet. It's this like snowfield where you can't see anything. You just get attacked by like these guys on horseback or undead horses or something like that. You can't see where you're going and it's just like a nightmare and everyone complains about it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Guys on horseback, or maybe the horses are just dead or something. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I haven't been there. I haven't seen it myself yet. So we'll see. I've kind of haven't been in it in the past couple weeks. I'll probably pop back in. I mean, literally, I just have to get through like this last DLC and then beat the last boss, and then I will have completed Dark Souls 2 again. And then who knows what? Then I will actually probably just play through Dark Souls 1 again, because that's a game in which I know what I'm doing and I know I can finish in like under 10 hours easily.
There you go. And that feels
even
good.
Me, a soul scrub. Yeah. Yeah, Souls 2 has been, I think I'm still like only in the 20s of hours of it. So it's not like it hasn't been 50 or 60 or whatever it took me the first time. I'm still doing pretty well.
There you go.
Some of the stuff still carries over, but I'm not like Dark Souls 3. I felt like I was crushing it because it like all of my practice in playing Elden Ring like carried over, and Dark Souls 2 was not that right away. But And that's it for games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there it goes.
Talk about movies.
All right.
All right. There's so many now.
Yeah. Well, Weiss, can we start with you came over to your mom's house, we sat down, we ate some Italian cookies, and you said to me, Have you yet seen Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie? And I said, no.
Which I had watched the night before. Finally, it had been all over the just people recommending for like well before it came out to me, and like had so many people to see this, and I've went in so almost blind.
Yes,
that I recommended the same. I'm just like, just go in. Now I did have the reason that I said for you both to see it is the one thing that I knew going in, unfortunately, but like, what a way to start a movie as well as everything else. Tim, you did see this? Yes.
Yeah, kind of.
What is kind of?
Well, kind of is that I stopped watching it because I was so bored and not into it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, wow. I was like watching it because I also went, and I was curious if you guys had got into it blind as well or knew because there's a show, right?
And, correct, but I have not seen the internet show.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Like I went into it, you know, blind, and I'm like watching it, and I'm just kind of like, okay. And at some point, like a half hour in, I'm like Googling about it, and I'm just like, oh, this is supposed to be funny. Oh, no. I'm not laughing at anything in this movie.
Yeah.
And then by like halfway in, I'm just like, yeah, this is not doing it for me. This completely missed me. But it's like I would not say this is a bad movie, but it just
it
missed me completely.
That happens. So, that happens with comedy. It took me until the inciting incident to really be like, oh, OK, there was a choice and they made that choice. Now I want to see what this movie does.
I wondered if you're if like the
I also watched it by myself, so you know there's that too.
I was watching it with my wife and daughter and so the three of us could like give each other stares and be like, are they for real, what you know. Tim, I guess I presumed that perhaps the jackassery of it, for lack of a better word, the almost prankiness of it might have had some appeal for you then, but no, obviously not, I guess. I guess what the thing that hooked me the most is that I could so see us doing some version of this with some footage that we shot 20 years ago.
Absolutely reminded me. I mean that was kind of part of it too, of just sort of like seeing, you know, a hodgepodge of everybody's ideas, and but also we didn't make BlackBerry and Tony and which is like digging back and being like how much like BlackBerry is a movie that should not have worked, and being like blown away by that one, going like, oh wow, this is the way this guy does stuff,
and the way his brain works.
Yeah. And just that, like the direction of it too is just really, really well put together. Like there's still shots that's just like, I don't know how quite they did that or got away with that. Yeah.
That's I don't know if I was, honestly, I cannot say for sure if I was more enthralled while watching the movie versus having to like look up what the hell I just watched afterward and learning about it and learning about you know there was no budget, that they did everything guerrilla style over the course of 2 years, that they did not plan ahead 20 years ago, they just scraped together, they you know just plowed through hundreds of hours of footage until they could assemble something that could fit the plot, like.
Right. Yeah. And I don't, and I still only, the only thing I, you know, stopped to be like, okay, I have to see if this is guerrilla or not. Like that was literally the only thing like I checked when I was watching, cause I didn't have other people to turn around and go like, and I think that's part of like the fun of that tension of just sort of like, okay, which of this is scripted? Is this a bunch of extras on the street? Is this
Yeah.
Like stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, for me it landed in a very Tenacious D sort of Flight of the Conchords fake music band where like they love each other, wouldn't hesitate to stab each other in the back at the slightest provocation,
right?
Until something goes wrong, and then they desperate for their friendship. So that worked for me. The Back to the Future structuring worked for me, and then later when I realized that like they did not necessarily steal any of Silvestri's score, but that the musician, one of them, like just wrote a lot of sound-alike music to give it the feel.
And finding the right way to do the meta, literally looking at the camera going like, no, we have to cut right now or else we're going to be sued. Yeah, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, and also I love visiting Toronto.
Yep.
Vicariously. Yeah. It's always a delight to just see something that is just belongs in that city and is a product of that city and that culture. And that movie was an absolute delight for me.
Yeah, and I mean like sometimes like the clever rolls into it, but I just had such a good time just like looking around the shots, going like what is going on? Like, you know, you've got your Odd Couple, like you can do a lot with that Odd Couple dynamic, but like yeah, and as you said, like you could kind of map on a little bit of like if we had these tools in our like the opportunity to do something like this, like there's definitely like ways we would have played with something like this.
I mean, and like what a cool smart decision to like, if it's framed as a documentary film as crew is following you around, then yes, you can just say like no, use the other camera so that you can match the footage, it's just everything about it was that it was half accidental and half planned and it all came together so well is just, and on zero budget without getting any permits to do anything.
Similar to Jackass, like and we can kind of I could transition into Best and Last after this, I suppose. Sure. But like movies feel more and more and more, especially right now, made through the system. So like when something squeaks out that's like, oh, this actually feels like someone got away with something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It that kind of feels nice. Even like there was a movie years ago called Escape from Tomorrow, which was this guerrilla movie filmed in Epcot. And like it's awesome. It's insane. Like it's, and I think Nirvana's a better movie. Oh, like, yeah. Like Escape from Tomorrow is like, it does exactly what you think. Like it films it as a horror movie, but it's super cool to see like that stuff. But it's like, shit, they got away with this. Like they somehow got away with it and got like the licenses to like get this out as a movie, even if just for festivals and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, just super nuts. Just for me, this was this was I want to say like a like Jackassy experience of sort of a jaw dropping like what the fuck? How did they do this? How are they doing this? How is this happening? What am I watching? That they that they took the news footage from news footage from a real shooting by Drake's house and were able to recontextualize that real news footage as part of their own plot. The whole thing is kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, and just like the reveals of the shots of like Jared from Subway, one of those things that's just sort of like, right, yeah, of course that was everywhere. Stuff like that.
Going in to watch The Hangover, and it's like the R word over and over.
That was like, if there's one thing that's like a joke, that I wish I would have seen that one with an audience. I have heard that is an audience moment.
Yeah, yeah, like. No, definitely. It was it was an audience moment in my house.
How did your kids react? I mean, honestly.
Yeah, because Julia doesn't know who Jared from Subway is. Like, she caught on eventually that they were like, oh, wait, it's 20 years ago, and these are all things that were canceled. Like Janna doesn't know who John Jomeshi is, you know, so I took sort of like, no, he's another one, and mm-hmm. so it was at that moment where they're watching this movie. I think that's when Julia sort of put it all together and was like, oh, this is all stuff that was considered incredibly inappropriate now, and that's uh-huh. how they're tipped off that they're in the past. Okay, that's
yeah. But like shouting the F word in a theater though, like for from the Hangover, like joke, like. Just picturing like Julia like seeing that.
Oh yeah, no,
that kind of moment. Yeah. That's
yes, wow. Absolutely. Just like, yeah, no, Julia, Jan actually, I think either fell asleep or got bored. But mm-hmm, me and Julia watched the whole thing. And,
yeah.
We're fans, and made me want to try to go back and watch the show, especially try to find the original internet show, which I guess is. Hard to find because they spelled Nirvana with a single N, presumably, and did not change it to two N's until it became a TV series a decade later. And yeah.
And I mean, it has a very distinct Canadian sense of humor, and I've certainly felt ways about Red Green and others through the years. So definitely get that.
Yeah. They've got a fan in me now, and I definitely want to go back and watch their other stuff.
Yeah, I watch the trailer for Blackberry, and you'll be like, "Oh yeah, that is the same." Yep, that is the same. That's team.
I always heard that Blackberry was this like surprisingly, you know, great movie, but I didn't realize that it was him, and that he just made the D'Anthony Bourdain movie. Like, holy shit! Yeah, this guy's not the doofus that he presents himself, you know, as. On screen.
And he did this movie, The Dirties, that was like kind of a lot more serious in tone. I'll just say that I saw from like I think it was like when before. Neon, which is like Draft House's like version of A24, was Neon. They did Draft House films, so they put out. It was like an early film that they put out through the Draft House. Yeah. So it's just, and that's very different than all the other stuff that I've seen. But knows what he's doing. I guess is the bottom line, because like you see it and you're like, it has that loose feel of like somebody who's talented but hasn't gotten out there, and then you're like, oh, he made the Anthony Bourdain movie.
Thanks for the recommend, because it was on my radar but was not going to be like there was no urgency for me to see it, so I'm glad that you pushed for it.
Well, to final Jackass movie, because that was there, so I did get out to see that. It's great. They've all been great. They're all really, you know, it's another tearjerker. I feel like the last two, especially at this point, like this one's interesting because it's a mix of like there's both clips and like hidden, but stuff that hasn't really been shown before from like both the movies and the show interwoven. So like that's kind of their way to be like, you know, we know we're too old to do 90 minutes of like new Jackass stuff, even with the new people. So we're all going to get like moments, but we're also kind of like going through stuff and contextualizing stuff a little bit. And like, I won't go into like the full thing. Like if you were really into like the Jackass and CKY's stuff, you might remember like the first thing Johnny Knoxville, like, id, which is fucking insane, and they do show it. I'll leave it at that if people are gonna like see it, but like and then, you know, seeing them now like versus it, and this one has Bam in there, which the last movie had him for like a frame. I think he was cut out for like, I didn't realize it was like more because of the substance abuse issues, and he just couldn't stay like sober for the shooting, and just kind of like broke contract and all that stuff. So like, that's why he got cut out of the last one, but he was more involved in this one. And even like they showed some of the stuff from the last movie that didn't make it in the last movie into this one with Bam. So it's, It's a nice little treasure trove, and like all the Jackass flicks, like, you know, when they inevitably do the best and last 0.5 or whatever, like, which these movies have had some of their best stuff sometimes in those like extra movies. Like, so that'll be exciting to kind of like deep dive into, but you know, there's some funny shit in there. It's good. Another great intro from Spike Jones, playing off of, this time playing off of Jamiroquai a bit, and yeah, some good shit. I'm sure it's probably on streaming by now, but I was glad to see, to catch that one with a theater.
yeah watch that with a crowd.
Which else from y'all that you have seen? I have not seen Spider-Man, if anyone wants to go into Spider-Man.
Nope, nor have I.
I saw Spider-Man.
Yeah, you saw
Spider-Man? Yeah, go figure. Yes.
Yes, yes.
Surprise is there. Yeah, that movie's really good. That was like the first movie in a long time where I was like, man, I kind of want to go see that again.
Wow. That is what I've heard across the board. And like, really, I have not liked the Tom Holland since Michael Keaton was in one. So that's like, I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, completely wrote this movie off. And then, I guess
that's fair. Yeah.
I mean, there were things I liked in Triple Triad, but like, you know, not enough that I was like, oh, okay, that like, you know, I feel like I have missed something by not seeing it, which is
because you know,
from Marvel in years.
Far From Home, that was the second one, wasn't as good, and then No Way Home was a nostalgia festival. It's still good, but yeah, this was like, it's like, you know, why weren't you? I mean, all of Marvel since Endgame has really been a mess, but like going into this one, and you know, the thing is, I don't know if you kind of know like what's going on in this movie.
Not really, not yet.
Like, if you can avoid knowing, not to,
right?
Okay, I'm just typing this in. Yeah, because I went in, you know, I watched like early trailers, and I had my own ideas of what the movie was going to be about based on things that I was seeing in the trailers and the title of it and how that would relate to the comic books. And I was so off base by, you know, where it was actually going. Like, it was... I don't think I've been swerved like that by a Marvel movie. I'm not swerved like that, you know, in movies like very often, where it's like, whoa, wait, like, what? What are we doing here? And unlike...
It just movie cuts to Kevin Feige's office. He's just going full Daffy Duck meta.
And that it works in... where it's, you know, ultimately like, oh, we are kind of getting involved with something of about where the Marvel universe is going. But I think it all surprisingly works in the context of this Spider-Man movie. And it has, so this was directed by the guy who did Shang-Chi, by the way. So I think this is going to cement him as a guy that they go to, or this is going to let this guy make some movies. Is exciting, because there is some good fight scenes in this for sure, and including, like, you know, the you see clips of it in the trailers of Spider-Man fighting a bunch of ninjas in like a prison. That scene is awesome. Good. And, you know, is built to through the movie, but that, you know, this I talked a bit about, like, you know, New Avengers was cool last year because it actually kind of had like some good theming to it, with like the characters dealing with, you know, mental health issues and stuff like that. And this is a movie about, you know, male loneliness at the end of the day, or really just loneliness in general. But, you know, being that it's about Spider-Man, male loneliness comes in there, and him trying to do everything by himself, and like what that is doing to him as a person and a superhero. And also the Punisher ties into that because he's trying to do everything by himself in his own way. So, and all that. So it has a good story, good characterization, like just a good plot to it. Just everything is working in a way that just hasn't been in Marvel movies in a long time. And it was very, very cool.
Yeah. No, I was really need to see if I was going to try and like sneak one out earlier. Did not happen, but you know, when it gets to 2.5,
it was like my head was so in the sand with this movie where it's like, I finally saw it and then like Googled it up and I'm like, oh, this movie's made a lot of money. Like,
oh yeah.
Cause I didn't get to see it for like a week at least. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay. Cause I didn't want to put anything into a search engine that would make it start surfacing articles in my face in any way, shape or form. So
well, this is, like, I mean, I'm so removed from mainstream at this point. I was just like, on the Marvel side of things, I have not heard like any excitement from anybody in so long. I thought this was going to do that last Captain America numbers. Like, it felt no different than Red Hulk.
Okay.
And so like that, all of a sudden, like people are coming back, going like, "No, this is good," and like everybody's seeing it. I was just like, "Oh, no shit." Okay.
Yeah, Spider-Man's got the Spider-Man has mostly been kind of contained from the rest of everything going on in the Marvel universe. And this, you know, this picks up where Spider-Man 3 left off. And it's not like, oh, this is what it happened after Endgame or after this movie or this thing. And like, yeah, there's like Yelena is in it. The White Widow is in the movie, but, and she's kind of been all over. She should have been the Tony Stark of this phase of, Marvel stuff, because she is very fun and charismatic.
Is that Florence Pugh?
Florence Pugh, yeah.
Oh, I see. Cat. Okay.
Yeah, she's fantastic, and it's like, yeah, we are rolling into an Avengers movie in December that feels completely unearned.
Yeah, I think that was a large part of it too. It was like every, and again, I'm so removed, but like every trailer for that for Doomsday is just like what
can I go off on a bit of a side tangent real quick?
So, I don't have much to say about this movie without getting into like spoilers, so
so speaking of what Avengers Doomsday might have been in an alternate timeline with Jonathan Majors, we have a local casting director here who used to be partners with Susan Gibney, who played Dr. Leah Brahms in Star Trek The Next Generation. And they used to run a like a casting agency here in Rochester. And this casting director, her daughter is a former model who's taken a few acting classes, I believe, and then moved to Hollywood and tried to make a name for herself in movies. And her first big booking, first major booking in a leading role is in Jonathan Majors' Run, Hide, Fight, Infidel Part 2, or whatever the hell this racist as hell movie is called. And like, I mean, this woman doesn't seem... She doesn't seem like a terrible person, but either she's like blithely unaware, or she doesn't care, or she's just a parent who's proud of her daughter for booking a big budget film. Sure. Like, and it's hard to blame her for that, but like, my God, I mean, she's been like posting about it, and she shared the trailer when the trailer hit, and like, look, my daughter's the female lead in this movie. And yes, her daughter is the female
lead in this movie. And that was my face in real time reacting to the shit.
Oh my God.
Yeah, just this terrible, like, the most Islamophobic thing, like produced by Ben Shapiro. Everything about this movie is just so toxic. And
yeah, all that there was like a leaked behind the scenes, or I don't know if it was leaked. It might have just been like a behind the scenes thing that was just like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
It is a joke of the moment sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's the only reason people even know what it is.
And so it is bizarre to go on Facebook and have her be so proud of her daughter and like have people give it likes and be like, yeah, congratulations, good for you, because she is a casting director. You know, she's part of the industry around here. Yep. And I don't know if people just don't know or if she doesn't know.
So there was a scene. Wait, is that the female? Is this your...
Mm-hmm.
JC, is that her?
Maybe.
Do you know what the name of her daughter is? Okay. I'm imagining this. Well, I'm just, like, on the Wikipedia page, there's a detail of a story where like two co-stars like fell through like some tempered glass.
No, yes, yeah, that's the boy. That was I had seen. Yes, correct.
Yeah. And there was like a little strike by the, you know, stage employees.
Mm-hmm.
Due to safety and labor, and just the quote was, "We're too busy being badasses, blowing shit up, flying helicopters, and killing movie terrorists to concern ourselves with four assholes with signs on the sidewalk and their illegitimate strike." Entire industry is in free fall due to strikes, and now that their members are out of work, they're trying to sabotage the few people who are still producing. We don't negotiate with communists.
Good. Yeah.
Fuck this movie.
Yeah, just. By the way, don't out of curiosity, don't go see this movie.
No, this.
Much like Melania, don't even.
Yeah, don't
give it a hit. Don't give it money.
Don't give it any traction.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Anyways,
so that's wild. Anyway. Back to the task at hand.
Spider-Man's great though, and does Spider-Man's not feature great. Jonathan Majors. And Doomsday is going to be a mess. But we'll deal with that in 6 months or so. 5 months? 4 months? Yeah, yeah, jeez. Yeah. 4 months
You'll
or so.
Have to
four, four
and tell and me half. How it is. Yeah.
I will tell you. I'm going to fall on the sword for that one.
Yeah.
And tell you how everybody is in it and how all the X-Men get killed by Doom at the very beginning. And the Fox X-Men, not the new X-Men.
Of course.
Yeah.
Since we went back a ways, I'm assuming at least one of you has saw the Aang movie at this point.
I've not seen it yet.
Okay.
The one that's on the docket. The Airbender movie, Last Airbender.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, like,
I don't think Dave's seen any Last Airbender. Oh, no. Dave, are you? Yeah. You're not a Last Airbender
I'm
guy.
Not a Last Airbender guy. No.
Well, if you get the inkling,
I might do that tomorrow. Now that I think about it, I forgot that we hastily got Paramounts for a month so Lauren could cry watching Steel Magnolias.
That's nice. Yeah, I didn't love it. I don't. I think the script is bad. Boo. I know. Like the fighting's great. Like it's a lot of. I'm just kind of worried about this new Avatar Studios thing that's kind of been like where they've been going since Korra, which like the seven seas is I believe the same studio, but it's basically like, you know, the replacing a lot of the voice cast. Like it unfortunately does not feel like our gang guys, a lot of that sort of thing, and a lot of, I don't know, Avatar is really, really good about not feel like, I think we were all, or I certainly was late to it because it was like, oh, it's a Nickelodeon show. Like it's going to be very catering to kids and dumbing things down. And like, it's a very smart show. And I think like this fell into a lot of those mistakes that the show did not, sort of thing. Mm. So while it's still cool that it existed, it's still stupid that Paramount didn't put it in a theater.
Goddamn franchise cannot catch a break.
Like, I know. I
being as successful as it seems to be, just like
yeah. Head. Yeah, and like Batista is the only one with like some like charisma when he pops in. I will definitely say that. But
Kratos, God of War, Dave Batista.
Really? Didn't know that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fight scenes are cool. Like that's my main thing out of that one. Like it's definitely clever. But let's see. Better fight movie to me, Tim, you saw The Furious.
Yep. Talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Did we talk about that on podcast?
Yeah.
I feel like we did.
Yeah. Okay. We did. All right.
Must have been end of June. Yeah.
Yeah. That must have been end of June.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can go.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. No, I loved it. I don't remember. Okay. So you talked about it. I probably didn't. I guess for me, like, it took a second to. It took until the hammer came out for me to go, oh. Yep.
That's exactly what I said.
Oh,
I was talking about it. I'm like, yeah. The hammer comes out and this movie takes off.
Yeah. Like, because I thought it tonally it was going to be in the vein of, the raid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
Like, it's
like
kind of a somber tone, but the fights are cool. And then by the end, when there's lightning flashes and guitar riffs, before the four like attack each other, I'm just like, I did not know this was a lightning and guitars movie. You know, going in like, movie. Yeah, it's a lightning and guitars fighter. I believe the like action choreographer from the Kenshin movies, which those movies are incredible. Even if you're not into Kenshin, the maybe the best like live action martial arts stuff. In the last few years, certainly like in the conversation. So happy to see this, happy to see if they do more.
That last fight scene,
has a reputation and earns it.
Yeah. 2v2v1. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
No, that's fight scene of the year that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. Brian Lee. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That person.
That dude is on the come up for sure. And
yes. Yeah. I think that is the person right now. Keep an eye, because it's especially like at the beginning of the movie. You might remember there's a lot of stuff that's like kind of floor fighting.
Yep.
Yeah. And that seems to be his specialty, I believe, because like Kenshin has a ton of that stuff too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You guys have any other? Yeah, I've got a couple more, but I want to see what you've seen.
I took the whole family to go see Coyote versus Acme.
All right. Oh, there Coyote we go. There Acme. We go. I did get to see. So, yes.
Yeah.
Tim,
did
you see?
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
It's like
we had a full slate.
Finally. All right. This movie fucking sucked.
Talk right. I know.
All right. Yeah, enough said. Moving on. No need to talk about this piece of crap.
Honestly, like, it's a kind of an easy transition from the fight movies, because, like, the action direction is really good in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, from, like, the explosions and a lot of, like, I don't know, a lot of the movement and just where they place things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good. Very, very good.
Yeah.
Very happy with this movie.
Very happy with this movie. This movie landed with me in a way that I was very disappointed that The Day the Earth Blew Up did not.
I knew you would compare to, and it's, you know, I still really like both. This one's clearly like
very better. Different thing. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just like, because I'm just like, man, Ketchup Entertainment did just like. So happy that they got to, like, and what a journey on this, because they were the ones that got to rescue this one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, so glad, you know, and that's the thing. Like, I don't think The Day the Earth Blew Up, I'm so glad it got a theatrical release, and I was glad to have supported it. I just wish that I found it funny. Whereas this one, like... this one immediately had, I think, stronger hooks for me because I think Eric Boza is one of the most talented human beings out there, but I think one of the reasons why The Day the Earth Blew Up worked less for me is because it is really hard for an actor to act against himself and also like create real character perspectives instead of just doing the voices. And that's not to say he gave in any way a bad performance, but mm-hmm. there is something to be said for having real, like other different people acting opposite each other. And then the main animated character in this film is a silent protagonist. So this it really is more of an animated driven film, and then the actual comedy, that like the scripted jokes get to be driven by a more diverse cast of people. I just think that's a stronger setup inherently than having mm-hmm. one incredibly brilliant guy voice everything.
Even though he voiced so many voices in this too, which is so funny. But
I totally agree with that.
Yeah,
this gives a chance for Eric Bo. You know, it's Eric Boza doing great work in a scene with Will Forte. It's Eric Boza doing great work in a scene with John Cena. It's Eric Boza doing great scene work. You know, he gets to play. Yes, he does most of the animated voices, but he gets to play off different people in every scene because he's playing a different character and not just playing against himself. So a lot stronger in that regard. I love Will Forte. I'm a fan of his, so I like his comic delivery. And so everything was like, I wasn't necessarily laughing out loud at everything until the halfway point. Until Will Forte walks into Coyote's motel room. This twist. It's not really much of it, but there is that too, where he's like, he doesn't care. He's just wants I laughed out. That's when I just burst out laughing. And and once my kids saw me laughing, that's when they were like even Julie was like, oh, like they could tell just how ridiculous that was. Like that is the most beautifully stupid thing.
Like it's stupid in the way that comedy / cartoons are supposed to be. It pays off so much because you know the character and it's in character.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And also it's real kind of tension, right? Because like the first half, you're like, okay, you know what? Likeable guy is helping likeable guy. We're doing good things. And then it's just sort of like, oh, there's something, like, there's some real malice here. Like, and Will Forte feel, you know, like, is nervous, rightfully so.
It's success because it keeps the movie moving because it adds this extra layer of tension on top of everything else. And and it's just, and then all of a sudden, it is just true to the simplicity of the character. They're like, no, he just wants to cook that fucker and eat him. And everything has been to that end. It's so preposterous. It is, and is also emblematic of the lengths he would go to get the Roadrunner. It's just so smart, so brilliant, and I just love that. Had me just rolling for a, and we were the only ones in the theater, pretty much.
I got
one or two other people. I
had a full packed theater.
My theater is well populated.
Yeah, we barely got like tickets that weren't like front row, so it was like, it is still like, I was impressed. I'm just like, wow, okay. Yeah. And you know, even with like that, it's still like, you know, a bit of a tearjerker, and they like, are able to actually like pull empathy out of the situation in the right way. You know, like that's hard to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just so,
did you get Who Framed Roger Rabbit vibes off of this? Just with like, you know, we're looking in a world where cartoons are just kind of like acknowledged existing parts of the world.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, you do cartoon things, and cartoons, you know, kind of have their own little world and, you know, can be abused for profit or whatever. You know,
and even that opening did a really clever way of like matching that tone and still kind of like, I don't know, setting up a lot of things very quickly and not stopping to quite explain it. The professor, you know, like Dr. One of my favorite Looney Tunes, Peter Lorre.
Real person, Peter Lorre.
Real person, Peter Lorre. And, you know, there's a lot going on in that scene, like the action's going, but also, like, you know, there's consequences to things happening. And you know, like the power of black holes in both of them.
Just about maybe 1 week before, just by happenstance, me and my kids rewatched the pandemic era Chippendales Rescue Rangers movie.
Oh, which nice.
Is yeah. incredibly similar in terms of plot mm-hmm. and structure and stylist, you know, cartoons living in a real person world. You know, what does that mean? And, you know, very, very different sense of humor. And I loved that movie because I'm a Lonely Island fan, and that was a Lonely Island that was Nick yep. Eva Schaffer joined, you know, Andy Samberg yep. and Norman Taconi. So I still really like Chippendale. That Chippendales movie is will always have sort of a special place in my heart. But also rewatching it, I realized like, oh no, I see now that I was very taken with John Mulaney and Andy Samberg's performance in this movie, more so than mm-hmm. I was a lot of the other stuff. Even though it does a lot of great Roger Rabbit style stuff. I had forgotten about the wonderful Seth Rogen joke where it's like all the animated characters he has voiced all together.
Yeah.
that's a very funny gag. But it's also, you know, and so when I started watching Coyote Acme, there was a part of me that was like, oh, you know what? I see how this sort of this feels like a classic setup. Like there's a conspiracy going on and they're going to go and do some detective work and figure mm-hmm. it out. Like, you know, these movies really share a lot in common. And that's why it wasn't until that reveal.
Yeah.
That Coyote is not a real person. Because that what was funny about Chippendale is that they're real mm-hmm. people with they are chipmunks. But they are real people. They are John Mulaney and Andy Samberg. Whereas with right, this, right. it's like, no, what's funny about it is that he's the fucking cartoon.
Yeah. Yep.
He does yep. not have a stake in the real world. His stakes are all just him and the Roadrunner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wonderful. Just yeah. a wonderful movie. So glad it's doing so well. So good. Apparently mm-hmm. opening in 152 new theaters this weekend.
Yay. Yeah. It was like, that's why I kind of rushed out.
Because
I was like, well, I don't know how long it's going to be in theaters for, but yeah, I'm glad it's kind of like picking up some steam and people are going to see it. And, the Pepe Le Pew joke was like a shotgun blast.
Right. Great. I mean, that was great. Yep.
So, it's like, it happened so fast. Like you couldn't, it takes like mm-hmm. 5 seconds to process it. It's so good.
Brief, elegant. That's all that needs to be said.
Yeah. And there's so much like that where it's like it just happening so fast.
I'm excited to see it again. I'll get another one if I get a chance. That's the thing is I should see Spider-Man, but I might also just see this again. Are we the folks? You know, like I'll there's so many like one-liners or just like there's a lot going on. And even like, you know, I could clearly see that there's a degree of like they're using their budget well. It's mm-hmm. could be seen as kind of sparse in some frames. Like sometimes it doesn't feel like, you know, like this area is this area is that. But it's only if like you're thinking about it, do you even like pay attention because it's like so well done.
It's funny, you know, Jan, who is not Jan does not follow the economics of movie making, but afterward mm-hmm. we were like, you know, discussing the movie and its troubled production and I was explaining mm-hmm. it all to her and she's like, but that movie cost, I mean, that's a whole movie. How much money mm-hmm. did that movie cost? And I'm like, I mean, honestly, I think probably the largest single line item in that movie's budget was John Cena.
John Cena. Yeah.
He was worth every penny.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I'm sure like that. I mean, I have to assume they probably did film it out in the vicinity of Albuquerque. You know, I'm sure that's an expensive place to shoot.
That was in the credits there.
And otherwise, and like really the only, and that was honestly, when looking back, the only thing I wished is that there were more, I wish I enjoyed the supporting performances more. The laconic mm-hmm. secretary, she's very funny, and I know I've seen her in mm-hmm. something else, but I can't place her. But the niece and the third law firm partner, I don't know, doesn't mm-hmm. really bring much.
No, I yeah, Yeah.
They could have been anyone else.
Yeah.
But that's the smallest complaint I can level against this movie.
That's the thing, is it breezes by that kind of stuff. And Yeah, that's just even that is kind of like, I don't know. I was in my brain, like, I guess you could kind of like put that back to back with like The Office in Hot Fuzz. Like, it's the only way that, like, to make that feel like more alive, like the Police Squad, you know, like when they're like bouncing around things. But like, I don't know. There's so much going on in that script. And for a tax write off movie, like, my God.
My God.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Very happy. Yay.
Very happy with that. Yeah, the only other thing that I have, I did get to see Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma.
Hearing some, I don't know, surprisingly divisive things, but like, I don't know, kind of love it or hate it, even from the film's intended audience. You know, from people that are looking forward to loving this movie and hearing some uneven things.
I mean, that's, I feel that, I think, like, because it's both really awesome. I think what I narrowed it down to is I saw the TV Glow as an incredibly, and I'm sure I stole this from somebody else, but like, really lets you in, really gets into your brain, is just a very close movie. Mm-hmm. And this movie is really, really good, but it's meta and it's comedy and it's a dissection. So it's very distancing in that sense. So like, you know, it's hard putting those back to back, honestly, because like, I loved that feeling from, I saw the TV Glow. So it was hard to kind of watch this movie kind of behind glass, as you're dissecting these movies.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, but Gillian Anderson's performance is incredible.
Yeah, I mean,
the sets are insane. What it's actually saying about like sex and relations and like how that works within these movies and the time period and all that stuff. Like everything it's doing is really, really good.
There's just sort of this distance to an arm's length to the.
Mm-hmm.
I get what you're saying. I don't know if I can put it any better than you just did, but
that was just like, because I came out and I was just like, because it's just sort of like, I like the things I saw, I just wanted to like it more. And that was just like trying to put that together is like really hard, but like also it's awesome, like, and I hope everyone sees it. It's just sort of it's very different, but like you can totally see that it's made by the same filmmaker too. So I'm curious, you know, as always, I'm curious what Jane Schoenbrum's gonna do
absolutely
after this. And it's cool that it's getting as much attention as it is, you know, especially having Hannah Einbinder and Gillian Anderson in there, and like plenty of Easter eggs for people that enjoy, you know, this genre and such. Like, it's a filmmaker that is very much raised exactly like we were on the same things that we were. So like, there's tons of that. And like one of these supporting surprise, like sort of cameos was definitely like one of my favorite things in there. I'll leave that one,
not to the same. Forgotten about it by the time I get to see this movie, I'm sure.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't know if you've even like seen, per se, but it's a person with a lot of like charisma. So like just in the frame, you're just sort of like, okay, you could do anything. Sort of. Well, there's two of those, but yeah.
Oh, all right. I very much look forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me know what you think on that. Any other movies from you guys?
Well, I just want to say, Tim, you were right. We should have bought tickets to the Odyssey weeks ago if I wanted to see it in IMAX. So here's the trick. It never showed early. All right. Me and Jan and Julia all wanted to see it. And there was a 1 week where Violet was doing a theater camp. Just Violet. So we had to drive her there and drive her back. And that whole week, there was no showings early enough for us to be able to finish the movie and then go pick her up from theater camp.
It's a long movie.
It's a long movie. Mm-hmm. So we could not, just by virtue of, we had a deadline every day. We had a daily deadline that we could not break. So yep. we were unable to go see the Odyssey. But you saw the Odyssey, yes?
Yeah. Yeah. You ought to see these nuts in your mouth. Oh,
oh damn.
You got me. Oh, you got me. That was a sick burn. And you got yeah. me on that. I didn't see it coming.
Now, was that Christopher or Jonathan Nolan, that line? That was a Westworld's own Jonathan Nolan.
I saw the Odyssey in 70 yep. millimeter glory in Tinseltown in Rochester, New York.
Oh, right. Of course. Tinseltown's right there.
Yeah. One of two theaters in all of New York State that were showing it. I thought it was cute that they had someone, there was like a video going around just kind of like on the internet of like some theater worker giving kind of an impassioned intro mm-hmm. about before the movie about, you know, how complicated and rare it is to show in this. And we got of those too. Yeah. Wild that there's an elevator in that theater. I feel like I can't believe I've never seen anything in that theater before. Yeah, there's an elevator. The men's bathroom is on the second floor.
That's right.
Yeah, there is an elevator. That is a big ass fucking screen. Let me tell you, too big. I don't know. It did mess with like the proportions of it a little bit, just because like the left side. I was off to the right, so the left side mm-hmm. was like very far away from me.
Yep.
So like, yeah, it was not, you know, perfect framing, but that's fine. That's a fantastic, big, beautiful movie that I saw on the side of a building. Just a really, you know, really well constructed in how it is depicting that story, in that it is, you know, starting out in Troy and then kind of flashing forward to, you know, his wife and child in the present, and then going back to him and his journey, and then like where he is at in it. You know, just normal Nolan cutting around stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everything just looks great. You know, the sound of it was not did not blow my eardrums out. I literally brought earplugs because
yeah,
so many Nolan movies I've gone to see have just like blasted me. They've just been so fucking loud. I remember Inception was so goddamn loud, and I did not need to do that. Just, you know. No, it was, it's fantastic. It's such a great depiction of that story. And just like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a big, awesome movie.
biggest omission in my year by far, I'm sure. Like, pretty big, obvious. Like, it's probably still playing here. Not 70, but we do have a big, giant old side of the building IMAX.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, it's at the point now where I'm going to have to sheepishly go to my wife and be like, sweetie, I know that you also wanted to see this movie, but I really care about seeing it in 70 millimeter, and I know you don't, and you have to go to work every day, and I have my daytimes free, so can I just go see it by myself? And then if you want to take Julia some other time, you guys can go, but I just want to make sure I get this for me.
Yeah, because a couple people I was talking to at work were going to see it this weekend because there's not that many more weeks of it in 70 millimeter there before it goes on to something else. And it has been like when I was looking up tickets, like, you know, it was like the end of July and I went to see it on my birthday, and that theater was already almost full 2.5 weeks after I was purchasing tickets, because there's only 4 or 5 showings a day of the 70 millimeter version of the Odyssey, because there's one theater. It's very long. So, you know, but I was just one man, so I was able to squeeze in there and make it a little birthday adventure. So, that was great. And we're going to have very cool to see. All right.
No, that's awesome.
Y'all want to hear about some bad movies?
Oh, you got another movie. All right.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had some time both when I was prepping for a colonoscopy, and then just kind of home by myself this week. Yeah, y'all done that yet?
Not yet.
Y'all got your it's
time. Not yet. It's time.
Dude, I had my healthcare check-in again, because, you know, you got Andy Williams dying at 48. Not that he died of colon cancer that I'm aware of. I'm pretty sure that doesn't just sneak up on you when you're wrestling a match. Though it might, you know, who knows?
Don't count it out.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, like I had my primary appointment in like April, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, you need to do this, and they're trying to, because there's like two different things you can do to have them like look up your butt. And I'm like, no, well, you don't have to convince me. I will just go through the trouble of getting the colonoscopy so that we're all sure. But it's like, I scheduled that shit 2 days after my birthday. mainly because I just wanted to get it out of the way. You know?
So that's two odysseys very close together for you, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, for me, just so you're aware, you know, just those of you at home, it's like, you know, you got to clean out the system so they can get a good look around in there to make sure everything's all kosher.
Yeah.
So you can't eat anything the day before. And then, so my appointment was at like 9 a.m. So it was like 6 the night before. I had to start drinking the juice that was going to make me just poop, just clear out the guts. And I had just been drinking liquids that whole day, but, so there was a question in chat. Usually use Colite. Yeah, about that. What's Colite?
No, I'm just doing that thing where I'm like hard cutting from us forming X Strike to us podcasting about colonoscopies. Like, it's just very fun for me.
X Strike Studios, the show, the movie.
Yeah.
Just like. Yeah, so but the thing is, because my appointment was in the morning, I had to get up at 2 a.m. to drink the rest of the stuff of my guts.
So there's a Colite.
Yeah, there's ups and downs to very funny, Dave.
That was unintentional. You know that I did not even occur to me as you.
Bullshit. Yeah, no. For me, it was a solution of Miralax mixed with like a lemon Gatorade, because you can't have red spectrum one, because that could make it look like you have a bloody business down there. But yeah, so I had to wake up, and there's ups and downs to like depending on what time of day you do it. So like I was up at 2 a.m. drinking the stuff and cleaning out the system, and everything's all good up there, by the way. Yeah. I'm up at 2 a.m. drinking this solution and watching Mortal Kombat 2.
Didn't work out, huh?
I watched half of it in the middle of the night, and then I watched like the rest of it. I don't know, whatever, it doesn't matter. I watched it in like two sittings. Well, actually, multiple sittings, covering how many times I had to pause it to go to the bathroom. But anyways, yeah, the first. I don't know, half-ish of that movie. I'm like, is this worse than Annihilation? And it's not. No. It's not good. And it's not until like about halfway where it comes back around to like Johnny Cage that it's like, okay, like there's some good stuff going on here. But the movie is more or less a mess. still. I mean, like that first Mortal Kombat reboot movie was like okay.
Yeah.
And had
yeah.
some decent fight scenes and decent lore to it and some, you know, a couple of surprisingly okay performance. I mean, that first movie centered around like, you know, a original character that they made up from the movie that nobody likes. And just this weird thing where it's like, oh yeah, when you go to fight in Outworld, you get special powers, which is what they use to hand wave that Liu Kang can throw fireballs and Sonya can shoot whatever energy things. So part of the movie like focuses on the first movie was very much about like Sub-Zero and Scorpion. And this movie is split between Katana and Johnny Cage, and just like all the Katana stuff is not good. Cause it's just like, oh yeah, you know, Shao Kahn killed her parents and now she works for Shao Kahn, but she still wants vengeance and she has to get this kind of revenge on him. And Johnny Cage just doesn't want to be there, which, you know, early on it eventually gets funny and very entertaining and kind of finds a groove to it. But, you know, there's fight scenes in this movie that are just like so throwaway because it's like, OK, we're having like a tournament sort of. It's like a more like a team battle, like a Soul Calibur team battle. Like there's four people on this side or four or five on the other side. And, you know, they get eliminated one by one. Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, you got to kill people. It's Mortal Kombat. There has to be like brutal fatalities and such. But just like, you know, I think Liu Kang loses his fight and then just turns into a fire dragon and flies off into the sky.
Oh, right.
And it's like, okay. I mean, I think what they're getting, and you know, it's this idea that like, of course we're going to have another sequel to this, right? And then we'll have like Fire God Liu Kang, like from the most recent reboot of the games, I think, which I think it would be more fun if you had like zombie Liu Kang, but they have zombie Kung Lao instead. That's a good fight scene. There's like Liu Kang Kung Lao fight scene is quite good. And there is, it's just like, you know, Johnny Cage is just kind of like, oh, all this stuff is crazy. And like, you have the other combat characters like not being very interesting, but this kind of like, he has this fight with Baraka in the middle where he like impresses him with kind of 80s kung fu movie action moves that's like very endearing and amusing, and things are kind of better from there on out. Yeah, well, because that's the angle they take with Johnny Cage, not that he's like, I mean, not that he isn't like a good martial artist, but also it's like he's in these movies and you think of like these things that they would do in like an 80s action movie in that kind of contact or lack thereof. They lean into that a little, and that's fun. But for the most part, that movie is not good because there's just a lot of very boring characters in it, and then they die, and you feel nothing. And like, what's her name? Sindel gets like killed in her fight, and then she's just like in a few scenes later, and just kind of like, oh yeah, you know, Quan Chi brought her back. I'm like, she's not really doing anything. She's just there. Like, she could have just been gone. Like, yeah, Quan Chi's there, just being a necromancer, not fighting anybody. It's not great. It's clear why they delayed that movie like 6 months to try and like shine something up together, but it does have some redeeming qualities, unlike Masters of the Universe, which
I've been hearing the opposite for like
just fun.
No,
the writing in this movie is like so bad. I'm judging it too harshly, but just like the jokes are, you know, where it's like, okay, Nirvana, I watched and I'm like, you know, it is a comedy and like, I'm not really laughing at anything, but it's like, like the jokes in this movie were like agony to me. It's really, because what they're trying to do tonally, like it feels to me like, you know, an MCU movie where it's like they want to have kind of that Brian Michael Bendis like quippiness to it and lightheartedness and like everybody's a comedian and whatever. And they're trying to tie it into the way these characters all have ridiculous names.
So they're all pointing them out and all making a joke out of them.
Well, the reason why is because Prince Adam was sent away from Eternia when he was a little kid. And because he was just a little kid, he was like, oh, that guy's got a fist. We call him Fisto. I call him Fisto. Like, he just gave everybody like names because he was like 5 years old and didn't learn anyone's real names. It's just like, oh, he's Ram Man because he rams things. He's Mechaneck because he has a mechanical neck. Which is just the way these characters are named, because they were just meant to be action figures at the time. There's no grand lore behind them.
Right.
Really, they were just like as Transformers kind of. Not really. No. And Transformers kind of evolved beyond that. But like He-Man, you know, things. But either way, that's what this is going for. So it's like, you know, he lives this life as, you know, grows up on Earth and has no connection to Eternia. He just kind of remembers it vaguely. And there's some fun, goofy stuff there for sure. But it's just weird when you're like making fisting jokes about Fisto and like Skeletor is projecting to all of Eternia about how, and you know, Skeletor is kind of like wobbling back and forth between like, you know, being like evil serious Skeletor, but then also trying to be ridiculous sometimes.
Maybe wacky cartoon Skeletor.
And it's like, pick a lane. It like the first time that comes up, it's like, I think it's like, you know, he overruns the castle and makes some grand speech and like raises his hands in the air. And then there's like this awkward moment where he looks around because he was expecting all of his minions to like laugh or cheer or something. He's like, ah, come on. Like, and it's just like, oh, is that what was going on there? Like, it just doesn't land right. But he's addressing attorney, and he's like, ah, you're all but worms beneath my feet. And then Man at Arms says, did he just call us butt worms? And it's like, what are we doing here?
The feeling that I got from some of those jokes in the trailers that I saw were like, boy, they are really like begging for the laughs instead of just letting them happen organically. They're really asking the audience, here's the jokes, please laugh, instead of just like letting the audience decide whether or not something should be funny.
Yeah, like Man at Arms is... It's just kind of Idris Elba being like an action guy and talking about how much butt he kicks. And it just like, I don't know, it just doesn't work and just feels kind of lame and stupid. And there's just so many of those where Wise is cracked. And I was just like,
I feel like I would be the same on that one. That is hard to get past. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like a fun bit at the towards the end with like Skeletor where he's kind of put out of context, but you know, for me the movie was so far gone at that point. And just like okay, you know, here's a scene at the gym where there's some, you know, Adam in the real world is trying to get buff, and like there's another old gym guy there, and who is it? It's Dolph Lundgren. And what's the last thing he says to him? Good journey. Like, okay, guys, all right, okay. It's like, are you trying to show reverence or like, are you making fun of it? And it doesn't really feel like both, or it's happening in any elegant kind of way. I mean, like, whatever, it's Masters of the freaking Universe, but also it's like the Netflix show I really, really liked, Masters of the Universe, Revelation, like the Kevin Smith one, like that was awesome. Yeah. And a lot of people don't like
it. I still got to finish that.
Focused on female characters and people of color. And God. Yeah. No, that thing is not about He-Man, really. He is not the hero of that show.
Yeah. What? You've even got that Chip Zdarsky Keltura comic or Captura years ago that was really like a parody thereof. That was good.
Weiss, help me media vocabulary this particular phenomenon, because there's a very sort of like teenage try-hardness to this style of comedy. It is, and it's a little bit sort of the feeling that I got from like the Illumination Super Mario Brothers movie, where it's like, here's a parade of familiarity, and we are going to try to subvert, like, the way in which we are honoring it is that we're too scared to honor it, and so we have to try to subvert it because we're afraid that earnestness will make us look cringy because we're teenage adults. Like, what is that? What is that?
Yeah.
Can you vocabulary that any better than I can?
I don't know if I can. I mean, it is just being afraid to be earnest. And I think, like, I don't know. It always kind of goes in waves through the years of whether that, like, works or not. And, like, some audiences are too young to know the difference. I think Shrek is really interesting because, like, I see that movie as highly cynical, and a lot of people that grew up with it think of it as like this, you know, big-hearted romp, you know, sort of thing. So, like, but I do think, I don't know, I keep feeling like Ernest swings back, and especially when things are like dark and shitty in the real world, like stuff that's that can pull off earnest, like, you know, even Everything Everywhere All at Once, you know, very, very earnest, or Barbie, you know, like these movies like can succeed. It's just like, movies are a business and investment, and, you know, anything that they're like, this is going to scare off a test audience. It's annoying. It's just annoying. Like, more lessons should be learned from that Dungeons and Dragons movie that somehow did not get a sequel. you know, like, I think that found that like perfect balance to make everybody kind of happy. But
yeah, I don't know. That's too bad.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know if people would be lost in the sauce if they tried to get into a lot of like lore of like, what was Skeletor before he was Skeletor? It's like, no, he just shows up and he's just Skeletor. He's the guy with the skull face.
Yeah.
And you, just you, like,
Yeah, okay. you got to play the old like a Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers, you know, almost like a serial. Just like this is another adventure of He-Man, and then kind of figure it out from there, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Like, yeah, I don't think the idea was bad. It's just the like, you know,
yeah,
the just kind of making fun of all of it. Yeah, yeah, and just
yeah, yeah, being better than the material.
Like, yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah,
yeah.
And what
yeah.
was that? Oh, what yeah. was something was, that I
did? You have any other?
Like, oh, okay, pretty sure so. I like the 80s. Masters of the Universe movie more, because at least that was weird.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I'm fine. I don't, because I feel like we had a discussion on this podcast about some movie that I saw earlier this year that was like the reason why it succeeds is because they are honoring what it is that we like about this stuff. It is, we are, it, mm-hmm. It's earnestly honored, but what was it? It's not
The Muppet Show pilot. I'm looking through my stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking through my stuff too, and I don't see. I can't remember what it was that I was like. This just really. It does not treat these things that we. It doesn't treat these things with cynicism. I don't know what it is. I don't have it on my list. I don't remember. Oh well, that's too bad.
Oh well,
like it was based on a property, you know. What? It was like based on something.
Yeah, yeah, like yeah. It was some modern remake of something old that treated it with respect. And what was it? Oh, this is going to drive me crazy. This is
going to bug you. Yep.
Yeah, it's really going to bug me.
Well, you're the editor. You can always put this in later. I'm sure we'll do it the next
Hey, editor Dave here. Just want to pop in that I remembered while I was editing it right after the show that it was.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. I don't feel like we need to take the time to discuss it, but kind of along those lines, perhaps by next month, I will have finished season 2 of Batman Caped Crusader. And at least as of right now, I think I like season 2 of Caped Crusader better than I like season 2 of X-Men 97.
Okay.
I
haven't watched either. Well, I watched
the second season of Caped Crusader came out until this very minute.
Right around the same time as the second season of X-Men 97. It was...
Which I still haven't seen.
All right. I'm almost done with season 2 of Caped Crusader. I really like them both. But whereas I think I liked season 1 of X-Men better than Caped Crusader, I think I like season 2 of Caped Crusader better than X-Men.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
So we'll talk about
Glad
that
Glad to have
next
them
time.
Both. Yeah. No, excited. Hopefully I can... I've been trying to see, that X-Men season for a bit.
Yeah.
TV has just not been happening. Yeah.
Very cool. All right.
That's all I got.
Yeah, I know we're late. I have to mention last weekend was All Elite Wrestling's All In 2026.
You seem to think that was a good show.
That was like one of the best pay-per-views I've ever seen, with some of the best matches I've ever seen, the best like entrance I have ever seen, for sure, for Will Ospreay's entrance there. It is
cool.
Like, I've rewatched it so many times this week.
Oh, it's wow. Okay.
One of those things, I mean, for some reason, All In is AEW's version of WrestleMania. They've done it. They've done 4 of them. 3 of them have been at Wembley Stadium in London. One of them was in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
This one was back in London after a couple years with, homegrown star Will Ospreay in the main event challenging Kenny Omega for the world title. And it was just the whole event was really good. I mean, like, idiot wrestling fans like to make a lot of hay that it's an 80,000 seat stadium. They only sold 45,000 tickets, which is a lot, by the way. the whole thing was a great show, but like the last 3 matches, especially, were it just built really well. Like the women's match between Willow Nightingale and Mercedes was also fantastic. And a lot of times on these things, sometimes the women's matches have a habit of overshadowing the men's main events, because I don't think they've ever had a women main event at pay-per-view as of yet. Just doesn't happen that often, but man, Ospreay versus Omega was so good. I mean, both of them had like incredible intros, and the match was also amazing. So just wrestling, man. It was like one of those moments where, you know, wrestling, everybody's just, idiots are just like, well, you know, it's fake, right? Or, you know, it's just so stupid. I can watch it. But, you know, wrestling is, or they, no matter what you compare to, like, wrestling is ultimately like more a form of theater than anything else. And that it is live performance on stage. It is, you know, actors putting on a show. And there's those, you know, little kind of improvised quirks or decisions that are made in the moment that like will enhance the performance. Except, you know, it takes the form of this like eternally running, never ending story, like a comic book. And there are just, you know, things happen like all the time. Sometimes, you know, storylines work and storylines don't, and you build things over years and maybe it doesn't work out and blah, blah, blah. But then like sometimes these stories you build over years and years and no one gets hurt and like everything comes together at the right time that you get like these perfect magical moments that you don't get in like any other form of medium. And that's what the main event of All In was. It was like one of those perfect, like all the stuff came together at the right time and then presented in the right fashion. That's like, yeah, that's fucking pro wrestling, man. And also 70-year-old fucking Sting threatening to dive off a ladder, but then his son, who looks exactly like him, stopping him from doing it and jumping off the ladder himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sting's son is having his debut match on Dynamite this Wednesday.
Oh,
okay.
Little Stevie Borden. Steven.
I don't know if I've seen him since he retired at this point. So.
Oh, Sting?
Sting, yeah.
Yeah, he's popped up a couple times.
Just I mean, I yeah.
Of, yeah.
Like when, that makes sense.
Yeah, he just every now and then, and just, yeah, here's Sting. But yeah, he hasn't really wrestled. He's kind of beat some people up with a bat. Like, dude is just awesome. That's Sting awesome. Rules. Yeah.
Yeah.
The New Day. If you remember the New Day from WWE.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're in AEW now as of last week.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. So, like, all three? Or?
Well, no, Big E is not. He doesn't wrestle anymore because he had his neck broken. Unfortunately. Ooh. Hey, he has his health otherwise. He just doesn't wrestle anymore. But no, Creed, Austin Creed, and Kofi, they apparently were asked to take a over 50% pay cut by WWE TKO. And they were like, no. Nope. And so they took their release, and now they're
awesome
over as the new level in AEW. And they debuted All In, and yeah, they had a match in Dynamite last week that was awesome.
Sweet.
So, yeah, really, really exciting. The most excited I've been for AEW since like Danielson and Punk came in four years ago or so, something like that. But the times are good, and I definitely recommend looking at least looking up some YouTube clips from All In, because some amazing things happened.
No, I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. No, I would love if there was a ye olde classic box set of just a storyline. Here's all the ones. Here's all the Kenny and Osprey. Of course, I want the
Osprey stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it the stuff that I missed, of course. But yeah.
Exclusively the stuff that you'd missed.
Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. That's going to do it. I just had to mention. So.
Oh, yeah. No.
Still cannot remember the thing that I was thinking about that honors a thing that we liked as kids. Treats it earnestly. This is driving me crazy.
You'll remember.
I've been scrolling through my Facebook feed to see if I posted about it. Like,
that's why you need a letterbox, my friend. Well, man. Only doesn't help for TV. But.
I don't remember if it was a movie or a TV.
Yeah,
a movie or a TV.
Movie. You know, like I was watching a TV. You know, it's like a movie, but it's shorter. All right. All right. So that'll do it from us. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
All right.
Night. Click.
Bang.